We heard the top story in Eyewitness News. Dan Plato worried that the shooting at Cape Town International Airport this morning might reflect badly on Cape Town as a visitor destination. Lauren Isaacs of the Eyewitness News team went out to the airport fairly soon after the shooting had happened. Lauren, good afternoon. What were you able to piece together about what happened, where it happened, and so on?
Well, good afternoon, John. We got a call from a Cape Talk listener just after 5 telling us that shots had been fired at the airport. I left immediately, but by the time I got there, a small pool of blood and bullet holes through a glass sliding door were the only indications of what unfolded there just less than an hour before. A section of the floor at the airport's drop and go zone had been cordoned off, and detectives arrived soon after. I overheard one officer tell another that they picked up more than 22 bullet casings, adding it's a miracle only 2 people were wounded in this morning's shootings. There were no people standing around the scene apart from SAPS officials. Of course, there were only passengers just streaming in and rushing to their checking points. I tried speaking to people manning stalls and those working in nearby restaurants, but with the airport being a national key point, people were reluctant to speak. We saw airport officials actually going to staff members saying, if you see any members of the media, don't speak to them.
With that said, have you been able, through multiple sources, to piece together a picture of what Donkey Boysen, Jerome Boysen, was doing there, where the first of the 22 bullets was fired, where the last of them was fired, what the path was between shooter and shot at?
All right. So what we know at this stage is that everything took place outside, just outside of the drop-and-go zone at the airport, and then also just inside, so not far from the escalator as you enter by the drop-and-go zone. We know that unknown occupants pulled up in a sedan and opened fire and then just fled, and that Jerome Boysen, we assume it's Jerome Boysen, that was hit, and then also a bystander. That's what we know at this point.
Thank you very much, Lauren Isaacs of the Eyewitness News team. And we have been reporting through the day, as of other media, that this is the third attempt on Jerome Donkey Boysen's life since the beginning of the year. So who is this man? Why is he the target of 3 different murder attempts? Dr. Simon Howell is a research director at African Policing and Civilian Oversight Forum. Gang boss? Yes. What else? I mean, what can you tell us about this man and why he is under fire so much this year? Simon, good afternoon.
Hi. Well, being a gang boss generally puts one in a position of danger, but I think, as far as I understand, this shooting is related to the one that happened in Stellenbosch on Saturday, in which Donovan Jacobs was shot and killed, and he allegedly is a member of the 28th, or is aligned with the 28th, and Boysen, as the alleged leader of the Sexy Boys, is aligned with the 26ers. Now, the 26ers and 28ers are not supposed to exist outside of prison, but they have come to and are in eternal conflict with one another.
When was the move out of the prison structure into broader society? Is that a fairly recent development?
It's been occurring now for a number of years. Essentially, what happened is that a number of very rich people associated with crime and criminals were arrested and ended up in the prison system, and they essentially bought their way into the hierarchy of the Numbers Gang. And have used the mythology as a means of legitimating violence, essentially. You know, if you commit violence against someone, especially at a larger scale, you need a story to tell about that violence in order to justify it. And essentially, the number mythology or the number story provides an excellent means of justifying that violence.
Yeah.
And as a result, it moved out of the prisons because it became a useful tool, a useful means of talking about gang conflict within the gangs. If you're going to enter into a war with someone, you need a story to tell, and as do states when they enter into war, we talk about allied and Axis powers. So two of the gangs, drawn on that mythology to justify their violence.
So the 26 is the allied and the 28 are the Axis.
Well, I mean,
And I'm told by a couple of listeners that Jerome Boysen is believed to own the Cubana Lounge in Stellenbosch, where the other shooting, which killed a known gangster and a mother who was just celebrating her 30th birthday.
I'm not particularly, I don't know his profile, his portfolio of property. However, that would make sense in a sense. But I mean, Jerome Boysen is far more, is far deeper in than simply owning the property or the club. He has been implicated in numerous criminal activities, and I mean, he's been targeted before, and this is the third time this year, I think, that he's been
this
shot
is
at.
And I know that violence is part of being in a gang, part of being a gangster, part of being a gang boss. Violence is part of that, but there does seem to be a more concerted effort to take him out than there seems to be a concerted efforts to take out other gang bosses whose names are publicly quite well known.
Well, there's been a larger issue here in terms of the illegal trade or the illegal drug trade, and the club bouncer security industry, of which Jerome Boysen is a fundamental link between those two worlds. And I think for that reason has come under significant fire. You know, he's sort of a pivotal person. The problem, of course, is when you when leaders are displaced either through gunfire or veto out of the group, that causes destabilizes the gang internally, and a lot of conflict can occur as a result because people buy for and fight for leadership positions. And you know, when last time he was shot at, there was immediately afterwards there was violence in Belar. That was a function of a leadership battle taking place.
And Simon, it's an incredibly naive question to which I sort of broadly know the answer, but you and I are talking about him, and a lot of the correspondence I've had about this during the day is absolutely convinced that he is a criminal, that he is a violent criminal and a criminal with hands in many criminal pies. And the naive question is, why is he still walking the streets free to be shot at?
Well, there are different levels of criminality and different levels of complexity. As one moves up the organized crime chain, so to speak, the difference between what is considered traditionally criminal and that which is white collar crime, for lack of a better term, becomes blurred. And I think, you know, it's not so easy to pin charges on someone like Jerome Boysen because the trails, along which implication would be transferred become more and more smudged as you go up the ladder. So, you know, it's not the same as someone committing a murder and saying, well, that person shot at that person, therefore that person is guilty. Rather, there is an entire hierarchy below and around people like Jerome that makes it difficult to follow paper trails, but also means that people will take the fall for the person. So, you know, I mean, if the police are investigating such entities and begin moving up that chain, someone will essentially be sacrificed so as to prevent the leader from having to actually take the fall.
Thank you very much for those insights, Dr. Simon Howell, Research Director at the African Policing and Civilian Oversight Force.